This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. You know, when our guest today, Jack Venables, flew back to Washington, D.C. on the inaugural Central Valley Honor Flight, one of the stops was the Marine Corps Memorial at Arlington National Cemetery, where a larger-than-life statue depicting the famous flag raising atop Iwo Jima's Mount Suribachi rises powerfully above this famous quote about the Marines that I'm sure you've probably heard before from Admiral Chester Nimitz when he said, "Uncommon valor was a common virtue." Jack participated in four Pacific battles with the Marines, Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Saipan, and Tinian, all after following his brother Jim's lead and enlisting at the age of just 15. Just in case you're wondering, both Jack and Jim went back and got their high school diplomas. Jack would go on to get a business degree in college while Jim became an architect. So I guess the Marine Corps and the old GI Bill worked out okay for those brothers. Jack was back recuperating in the U.S. before the war came to an end, and it wasn't because of damage from any enemy fire. It was from a dreadful mosquito-borne illness called malaria. I'm guessing it must have been pretty bad, Jack, if they had to fly all the way home from Tinian.
Actually, they took me in a LCI from Tinian back to Saipan in the hospital because I had a malaria attack. And then they flew me back to Honolulu at an Army hospital there. And then from there, we took a ship back to Seattle, Washington, Bremerton Naval Hospital.
So malaria, how many times did that afflict you?
Well, we spent, both my brother and I, spent 10 days in a hospital in Wellington, New Zealand, taking 10 cc's of the most nasty tasting stuff you'd ever want, quinine. It is terrible. And they had a little guy who used to run around the hospital every morning. Because they gave it to you around the clock, every 4 hours, around the clock. They'd wake up and give it to you. Anyway, this little guy would run around, any flute today, mister, any flute today, and we'd buy fruit to chase the terrible taste of the quinine. So we finally, they gave us liberty, and I had asked the orderly if he would call our outfits and tell them where we were. And he said, yes, I will. And so I told him I had Jim's and my outfit. I saw him later, and I said, did you call? And he said, yes, I did. Well, as it turned out, we got liberty from the hospital one night, and we're down downtown Wellington, and we ran across some guys from our outfit, and they said, well, we understood that you guys had caught a banana boat and went back to the States, and they've been looking all over for you, and that's the rumor that you're gone, you left. Well, anyway, we both got, and he was up for a promotion, and so was I. And when I got back to our base in Paikakariki, the captain called me in and said, why didn't you notify me that you were in the hospital? And I said, well, I told the man in the hospital, the orderly, to call you. And then later I asked him if he did, and he said, yes. And I said, that's why. And he said, well, that's a bad assumption on your part, because it was your responsibility to call. And I didn't have guts enough at that time. You know, I was kind of an awe and awe of an officer to tell him, you know, may I say something? Because I wasn't able to call, actually. I was in bed all the time. So anyway, I got bypassed for promotion, so did my brother.
And what about the physical effects of malaria? What does that do to you? Because I doubt many people listening, unless they're your age and we're in the war too in the Pacific, most people have no idea what that is like and how bad it is.
It first starts with chills, and you just can't seem to get warm. I mean, you shake all over, and that goes on for quite a while, and then you start getting a temperature, and it goes up and up and up. And I think my highest temperature is about 104 or something like that. It was terrible, and you're just miserable. So, and a lot of people die from it. I don't know if any of the guys that I worked or served with died, but it can be deathly.
I imagine it makes you pretty weak, too.
Terrible. Matter of fact, when I was standing at the checking into the hospital, I fainted. They had one of those half doors, you know, with a little counter thing on it, and I was leaning on that, and I fell down.
I don't think too many guys got to be in a hospital in World War II with his brother. Did that help to have your brother there dealing with the same thing?
Yeah, I would say it did. Yeah, misery loves company, you know.
Did you ever get him to tell you many of his stories from the things he encountered over there?
No, he would never talk about it. I can remember walking down the street of Bakersfield after we came back, and a car would backfire or something, and he'd practically jump out of his skin. He would startle him so much. He told me a story about being on Guadalcanal. This is the only one he ever told me. They were on the front line, of course, and they had pup tents, and they'd covered up their foxhole with a poncho, and they had rifles with their sticking in the ground with the bayonet on, holding up the poncho. And his foxhole partner got up to relieve himself and came back in, and he was leaning on the hole, on the butt of the rifle, getting ready to crawl in the foxhole. And Jim had awakened my brother, and he started screaming, "I'm too young to die, I'm too young to die." And he was young, and scared the heck out of me. I think his yelling scared him more than anything else. But he never liked me to share that experience with anybody else, but he shared it with me, and I always needled him about it. I was sent to a malaria rehab center in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Jim and I met. He came up. He was stationed in San Francisco in the supply depot, and he came up to visit with me, and we spent a night together there. And then I went back to the rehab center. He went back to San Francisco. Now, to get out of the rehab center, you had to pass a tolerance test, and that was with a full pack, a rifle, a helmet, the whole shooting match, and you had to spent a week climbing the hills around Klamath Falls, Oregon. A lot of guys didn't pass it, and they had to stay there until they could. Well, of course, I was fortunate. And then they gave me my choice of duty. Well, needless to say, I chose San Francisco. And my brother and I served there, and we were there in San Francisco when the war ended. We were both operating fork trucks at the supply depot, 100 Harrison Street in San Francisco, right below the East Bay Bridge. When it was announced the war was over, he and I got a bottle, and the cars were jammed bumper to bumper, and people going wild. When the cars stopped, and we jumped in one of the cars, and there was a couple of older ladies in the front, and it scared the heck out of them. And we told them, "We're not here to hurt you or anything. We want to get to the church." And, of course, we had a bottle in our pocket, and we staggered into the church and walked up to the preacher and asked him to say a prayer, which he did. "Yeah, thanks." And thanked us, and we staggered out.
So the war's over. You had to get back to Bakersfield, because if you didn't, you wouldn't have met your wife. And I'm sure you can think back now, think about all those battles that you were in and close calls that you had, and you never would have met your wife. Your two daughters wouldn't have been born. You wouldn't have kids and grandkids. When you think back, was there one closest call that you think was the nearest you came to not coming home?
You know, that is a dilemma. I can remember being in a foxhole by myself or with somebody, and another guy's in another foxhole, and he doesn't have anybody with him, and he's yelling, "Come on over here, Jack, come on over here, Jack." And then you sit and think, now where is that shell going to hit? Is it going to hit here, or is it going to hit over in that other foxhole? And it's quite a dilemma to make a decision on which would be the safest.
And when you think about the odds of choosing right every single time, they're not always in your favor. So what do you think? You think you just kept choosing the right foxhole, or do you feel like someone was looking out for you over there? Have you thought about that before?
Yeah, I think God was looking out for both of us, my brother and me.
Is that a sense that you had then? Did you have some confidence in that? Were you a praying man over there?
Yeah, I'll say it was. You know, there's an old story about, you know, there's non-believers until you're in a foxhole and they're shooting at you.
You want to tell me the story of how you met your wife?
We were living in Bakersfield at the time, and I had a buddy. He was a coastie. I used to give him a hard time, a shallow water sailor, I called him. His name was Bill Barker. He just recently passed away, as a matter of fact. And anyway, he and I went into the place called Good Friends Inn in Bakersfield, they had a nice dance floor, a bar, and a black band that played beautiful swing music. I went in with Bill, and I looked over in the corner, and here was a girl I'd gone to high school with for the short time I was there. But I'd known her for years. Her name was Dorothy Oldfield, and the girl was sitting next to her, and she had a kind of a glow around her. She's a beautiful girl. So I went over to see Dorothy, of course, and then she introduced me to Esther, who refused to let me take her home. And they had a kind of a history of being in the place, and I had not been there before. And so I asked Dorothy to dance too, out of obligation, you know. But S and I didn't hit it off immediately. She was very skeptical. But Dorothy was working in my favor, because she kept telling me, "You're passing up a good deal." And she finally talked her into letting letting me drive them home, and I did. And then it went from there, and finally we started dating, and dated for almost a year, and finally got married.
And you guys will have your 67th anniversary this year?
June the 15th will be their 67th anniversary.
Seems like you have a lot to be thankful for, huh?
Mucho much.
Really quick, I know we're running short on time, but Central Valley Honor Flight. How was that experience for you to go back and see the World War II Memorial with a bunch of fellow World War II veterans?
That was the highlight, I think, of my ever being a part of the military. We were sent off by the biggest crowd I'd ever seen, with the bagpipers playing, and I couldn't believe when they had a water cannon, yeah, as we were taking off. When we got back to D.C., the airport there, I couldn't believe it. There was a big crowd there to greet us. And they had a gal who would run up and kiss you on the cheek. And then she'd run back, put more lipstick on. And guys were running to the head, trying to get the lipstick off. Yeah. Everybody was afraid somebody would take a picture and they'd get back to their wives. They'd think they were playing around. But she was a sweetheart. She was having a ball. But they were clapping and screaming. It was a wonderful experience. I had been to Washington, D.C. before with the family, but World War II Memorial had not been built. And that is just an amazing sight, unbelievable. I've never seen the flooring on anything that looked like it was wet when it was dry. And they're probably the most impressive with all the stars. Was it represented, what was it, 100 men per star?
Yeah, so it's over 4,000 stars, and it represents 405,000 Americans who didn't come home. And I imagine you could picture some of them.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And I was curious, because I can tell how finally you felt about your brother, and I know you miss him. When you were back there with all these other vets at that World War II memorial, did you find yourself thinking about Jim?
As a matter of fact, he was on the register. I don't know who would put it on there, but and so was my name.
You're talking about when you get to the memorial, you can go to these kiosks and dial up. You can search for a name, and it'll bring up, this is the individual, and this is where he served.
Exactly. So I was pleased to see that someone had sent his name in. I wasn't even familiar with it. Somebody else sent mine, too. Matter of fact, that's how I found out about the honor flight. There was a Marine friend down in Tulare. And I never got to see him, but we'd talk on the phone a lot. Since then, since I've been back, I've been trying to find people who were served in World War II, because it's a beautiful trip.
What was the most memorable or meaningful element of it for you when you tell these other guys, hey, you need to go? What's you're in sales for a long time. What's your selling point here? What's the hook that you share with them?
Well, it's free.
Yeah, that's a big one. It wasn't the lipstick, huh?
Well, and also the fact that, no, it wasn't the lipstick. Also the fact that people who are handicapped in some way or another and can't walk, the fact that their wheelchairs are below the buses, they don't even have to walk to get to the wheelchair. They have a lift at the rear of the bus. The people put them on. They go down. They bring up the wheelchair. Then they put them on the wheelchair, and down they go, and off they go, and their guardian takes care of them, pushes the wheelchair for them. It's a wonderful experience. I would encourage anybody that served should sign up for it.
Did it make you feel that somebody appreciated what you did, that what you did all those years ago meant something?
Yes, it did. Don't get me talking too much, because I'm going to get emotional.
Well, let's close with this. I mean, I want to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us so many rich and powerful stories. When you think back on what you did, what your brother did, what your generation did, guys a lot older than you, not too many younger than you at the time if you went in at 15, what do we need to know now? What do we need to remember and recognize about what all those Americans did all those years ago?
That's a good question. It's a hard one to answer, though. I would like to think that I signed up because I'm patriotic, but that really wasn't the case. I signed up because my brother did. And I had no idea. Of course, they assured me I'd be in the same outfit so we'd see each other. But I wouldn't give anything to pass up the opportunity I had to serve.
Is there an additional element of pride for you besides just being a World War II veteran, but being able to wear that red hat and fly that red flag that says Semper Fidelis?
Yeah, just being alive.
Once a Marine, always a Marine, but doesn't matter if you're not alive, huh?
That's absolutely right. My brother and I were very fortunate. You mentioned earlier, God was looking out for us.
Amen. And he's not done with you yet. Keep signing those other World War II veterans up for honor flight. That is Jack Venables, 87-year-old Marine Corps veteran. You'll find his smiling face if you check out the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. We're out of time for this week's program, but I hope you'll join us again next time when we are reminded again through these stories from our veterans that our freedom is not free.